It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
That GOP blueprint is being posted this evening. Separate components from House Ways and Means and Energy and Commerce working in conjunction, and GOP leaders say it is time to deliver.
Yeah, can you repeat those ideas?
Americans need relief. They deserve a new direction. That's why we're taking action to repeal and replace Obamacare with health care solutions that can actually work for the American people.
Tonight, HHS Secretary Tom Price and Budget Director Mick Mulvaney are expected to have dinner with President Trump to review the proposal, with Mulvaney as a founding member of the House Freedom Caucus, seen as critical to winning over the conservative wing. The Ways and Means proposal calls for dismantling Obamacare taxes and mandates, expanding health savings accounts, and providing a monthly tax credit to people who don't receive insurance through work.
What the president's goal is to give people choices, to let them purchase the kind of insurance that they want for themselves and for their family, not what Washington forces them to buy. This is a real important distinction between where we are right now in that individual and small group market and where we want to go.
The Energy and Commerce Plan calls for a patient and state stability fund, giving states flexibility, responsibly unwinding Obamacare's Medicaid expansion and strengthening Medicaid. Some of the discomfort has come from the tax credit concept.
There is a big divide between, in essence, the conservative camp within the caucus saying we feel uncomfortable at this point with the idea of a refundable tax credit, and other folks saying, wait a minute, this is a way of funding an HSA, a health savings account, that would be applicable to everybody.
And Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins has warned Republicans are not unified.
There is not a consensus. It is very complicated. And we shouldn't rush it. We need to get this right.
Even before its release, the GOP's plan was under attack from the Senate's top Democrat.
They don't want folks to see it until the very last minute. Just rush it through. I don't blame them. It's going to be very hard for Republicans to be proud of this plan.
You know what? We should isolate just that Schumer clip and play it over again. Is he serious? The Republicans introducing this replacement for Obamacare, they're introducing it at the last minute so nobody has a chance to see it. And, you know, what? Does anybody remember what happened, 7 years ago when Obamacare was implemented in the dead of night with no Republicans voting on it, with Nancy Pelosi saying we'll have to pass the bill before we can see what's in it? That is rich. In fact, Adam, I'm asking you on the air right now to isolate that clip and find that clip where Nancy Pelosi says we'll have to pass the bill before we can see what's in it. And we'll create a cute little clip that we can play often. All right, Sandy Rios, in the morning with you. Yes, I have a cold. I had it yesterday. And so if you hear occasionally a silence, it might just be me coughing or something like that. But I'm doing well. All right, so this is the big news of the evening, is that the Republican Congress, the Ways and Means Committee, and I think the House and Human Services Committee, made this joint announcement last night. Okay, so the deal is that President Donald Trump promised to repeal Obamacare. Remember this? And so then suddenly it morphed into repeal and replace. And that's where the problem has come. If you repeal it, the squishy Republicans are worried sick that, and they're right, that people who then find themselves not on Obamacare, not having insurance, although could I please just drop in that if you have Obamacare, you aren't necessarily insured. Just because you have insurance doesn't mean you get care. You have to be able to see a doctor, a good doctor, somebody within driving distance who can get you in to give you care. That's what health coverage should be. Having a piece of paper that says you have insurance is not a big accomplishment if you can't find a doctor or a network, or you can't get the services that you need. But I digress. The Republicans, the squishy Republicans, are scared to death that people who've been on Obamacare will shout loudly because the left will co-opt them about how they've been hurt, they're dying of cancer, and now suddenly they're off of Obamacare. Because, of course, the truth doesn't really matter. We all know this with the media, and we know the media are very much in the Obamacare camp. So that's what the Republicans are scared to death of. So this is what's happening. The Republicans are going to repeal Obamacare, just like President Trump promised. They're going to repeal it. But they are going to replace it with what many are calling, and I believe it's true, is Obamacare Light. In other words, they're replacing it with a very large government program to create, again, a nationalized health care plan in which you and I, our tax dollars, will go to subsidize people in order for them to have insurance. In the same, it's another entitlement program where we pay money and people will get money to buy insurance. Even if they're, according to what I'm understanding, even if they're illegal immigrants, they're going to be qualified for this. Let me just read to you exactly. I'll get the wording straight on that. Yes, it will allow illegal aliens to get subsidies, just like Obamacare. All right, now that's a huge red flag. That's just one thing, but that means that you and I, those of us that have seen our insurance premiums go sky high, who've had to pay huge premiums, whose tax dollars have gone to cover the alleged millions who've been added to be insured under Obamacare, will continue to subsidize. So this is not a free market plan. This is Paul Ryan's new big government health care plan. And I have to tell you, remember, you may not, I'll tell you, Mitt Romney tried this in Massachusetts. It was the model for Obamacare. It's still going on, by the way. And what they found out in Massachusetts, they socialized medicine for the state of Massachusetts. What a great idea. We'll cover everybody, just like President Trump actually said he wanted to do. So we'll cover everybody. We'll say everybody will be covered. I mean, this is something government should do, right? Well, no, because what happened was, and is happening, Massachusetts went in debt. The costs skyrocketed. And guess who pays for the red tape? For when they go into the red and they can't pay their bills, which they are there all the time, guess who pays for it? It's you and me. We are paying for the health coverage of the people who live in Massachusetts. So the Republicans have come up with a plan just like that. I want to read you what Daniel Horowitz has written this morning. And in fact, we'll put this on our Facebook page. Establishment Republicans remain clueless about health care. Time for Trump to act. Daniel writes, Republicans continue to accept the entire premise of the Rhino Care framework and are merely negotiating the fine print. They are insufferable. There is no talk of lowering prices, fostering a revolution of choice, competition, portability, cost consciousness, or breaking down the barriers between consumers and providers. Had deregulation of airlines been left up to the GOP, we would never have had the revolution of Southwest Airlines. We would never have had Uber, Amazon, Netflix, Apple, or Walmart either. The entire premise and framework of GOP negotiations is working within the confines of the failed intellectual ghetto of the status quo, which is the retention of the entire market-crippling regulatory regime. Rather than breaking down the regulatory and subsidy state, which is solely responsible for making healthcare miss the 21st century and operate like a hotel room minibar rather than Walmart, Republicans are working with lobbyists to double down on it. And so they have introduced their plan. And you'll notice last night on Fox, the two people, it was Kevin Brady and Walden, I think, from Oregon. They're both very, from my perspective, you could say moderate Republicans. I would say establishment Republicans. The Freedom Caucus is not in. They're not down with this. Neither is Rand Paul. Neither is Tom Cruise. I want to say Ted Cruz or Mike Lee and others. So there's going to be a lot of opposition to this. And I don't think they can pass it in the House without the Freedom Caucus. And the Freedom Caucus totally opposes this. Now, here's the thing. The ideal situation from people that I trust on the inside who understands the process is that repeal and replace should be separated. They should repeal Obamacare immediately. They can do that. They passed a bill in both houses while Obama was president, placed it on his desk. He just wouldn't sign it. They can use that same bill, get it to him very quickly, and they could repeal this thing immediately. The replace part, they should separate. Because, you know, congressmen and senators are afraid not to vote for a repeal, but they will be much more thoughtful about replace if it's separated from repeal. So that's a situation that many are forwarding, and I think it's a great idea. By the way, we'll talk a great deal more about this on Thursday with people who know. You know, I'm a generalist. I'm not an expert on all of these issues, just I know a little bit about a lot. So we'll come back to that. This is really, I think, a great story. I love this story. And here's the headline. Trump offers Planned Parenthood funds if it halts abortions. President Trump has offered to maintain federal funding for Planned Parenthood if the group stops providing abortions. Its president has spurned the proposal and noted that federal money already is not allowed to be used for abortion. The New York Times inquired about this. And Trump says there is an opportunity for organizations to continue the important work they do in support of women's health while not providing abortion services. And so on and on it goes. Of course, they turned him down, but I just think that's brilliant. Does it not expose, you know, who they are? They don't want federal money if they can't provide abortions, which is a big part of their business. And by the way, they are a for-profit company who receive millions and millions of dollars of tax dollars. Millions and millions of tax dollars. Why? Why is that? I've never understood that. The charity known as Planned Parenthood charges for their services and gets tax dollars. So I don't understand that. All right, so another big story broke last night. Oh, which way shall I go with this? I think we'll go with Shannon Bream, clip 4.
Just weeks ahead of those scheduled arguments, the court said today it will not weigh in on the merits of the case, but the fight is far from over. Gavin Grimm, who was born female but now identifies as male, has been at the center of the case for years and knew the legal dispute may drag on far beyond graduation day. I talked with Grimm about that possibility before we learned the case would be sent back down to a lower court.
My goal now, and it has been for a while, is certainly to benefit other students. My high school experience has been frankly ruined by this situation. I will never be able to experience the full opportunities that all my peers have been able to experience.
Lead counsel for Grimm, senior ACLU staff attorney Joshua Block, said today, quote, "This is a detour, not the end of the road, and we'll continue to fight for Gavin and other transgender people to ensure that they are treated with the dignity and respect they deserve." The legal battle was sparked by an Obama administration directive mandating that schools allow transgender students to use the facilities of their choosing or risk losing federal funding. The Trump administration withdrew the directive, Attorney General Jeff Sessions saying it did not contain sufficient legal analysis. West Virginia Attorney General Patrick Morrissey, who led a coalition of nearly two dozen states opposed to the Obama mandate, said of the high court's decision today, quote, "This is a major victory for states and local school districts across our nation." The Supreme Court has ordered the Fourth Circuit to now reconsider the case in light of the Trump administration's guidance on the matter.
All right, that's Shannon Bream of Fox last night. I know I'm going to run out of time here, but I want to talk about this at greater length. The Supreme Court was on the verge of making making a decision, whichever way, on whether transgender persons had a right to go to public restrooms that they identify with regardless of the biology and other various things, especially in public schools, how that plays out. And they decided, in lieu of Donald Trump's executive order that rescinded the Obama order forcing school districts around the country to embrace transgender policy, since it was rescinded, the Supreme Court decided not to hear the case, sent it back to the Fourth Circuit. That's really big. So while you watch all these things happening, you need to know some important things are happening. I want to come back and talk about that case a little bit, bring you an update on the cake bakers in Oregon. They were in court this week, and I want to talk about that too. We're also going to be talking about the wiretappings, of the Trump Tower alleged by President Trump, and many, many more things. So stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
You know, if you see a huge group of people and they're all in line waiting to do something and they're all happy about it, don't you wonder, okay, what's going on? What am I missing here? What are these people excited about? In this case, it's thousands of people doing the same thing. They're joining MediShare. MediShare members share each other's medical expenses. It's that simple. It's growing like crazy because it works. Think about it. You don't have to deal with health insurance companies anymore or government health insurance. Instead, you're part of something you believe in. You're part of a community of people supporting each other, and you can save so much money. This could be the answer you're looking for, and it may be one of those things you start doing and then wonder, why didn't I look into this a long time ago? Find out more. Don't miss out. Call 855-PSALM-23. Now, it's available everywhere but Montana. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
We desperately need the light of the gospel to shatter the darkness that is sweeping through our land.
Evangelist Sammy Tippett for Fusion, the Heart Cry for Revival Conference.
We're asking Christian leaders to join us in seeking God for a mighty work of His Spirit in this critical hour. I've seen God transform entire nations, places like Romania, where God dispelled the darkness of atheism through the prayers of His people. I want to share with you how God did that and what He can do in our nation. So join me at the Heart Cry for Revival Fusion Conference.
Sponsored in part by American Family Association, the Fusion Conference will be April 23rd through the 27th in the Billy Graham Training Center at The Cove in Asheville, North Carolina. Register at heartcryforrevival.org.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Paul Kizito. I'm a junior biology major here at Truett McConnell, and I came from Uganda. What I love about TMU is number one is the heart of, you know, of just the school and the love for God, for Christ. You can see it once you step on the campus. Like, you can see it's best, like, the foundation for TMU is Christianity.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Graduation time is just around the corner, and in Setauket, Long Island, there's a bit of controversy over graduation gowns. For as far back as anyone can remember, the boys wore green gowns and the girls wore gold. But LGBT activists pitched a fit, calling the color segregation archaic and demanding a more inclusive fashion option. So this year, the graduating class will all wear the same color gowns. Students are furious. Around 100 walked out of class in protest. Some 900 citizens signed a petition urging the school to reconsider. But school leaders are not changing their minds. They say the decision to use gender-neutral gowns is progressive and inclusive. And once again, it demonstrates that everyone, every single person in America, and every single person in Setauket, Long Island, must conform to the LGBT way. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
The president laid low on the new executive order, signing it in private, out of sight of the cameras, leaving the rollout to his lieutenants.
While no system can be made completely infallible, the American people can have high confidence. We are identifying ways to improve the vetting process and thus keep terrorists from entering our country.
The new order aims to do the same thing as the first one, keep certain people with no previous status in the U.S. and who are currently overseas out of the country. Today, the Attorney General offered new evidence of the need to temporarily ban all refugees from the U.S.
Today, more than 300 people, according to the FBI, who came here as refugees are under an FBI investigation today for potential terrorism-related activities.
The first executive order caused chaos at immigration checkpoints before being halted by the courts. While opponents call the new order more of the same, the White House insists this one will pass legal muster with none of the confusion of the initial rollout.
I have spent much of the day today on the phone with members of Congress, the leadership, explaining the ins and outs of this EO, and I did the same thing last week. So there should be no surprises, whether it's in the media or on Capitol Hill.
All right, so that's what happened. It's a big deal. You know, there's so much news. I mean, it is a big deal. There was so much news yesterday. It's, you know, it makes your head spin. It really does. John Roberts on Fox reporting that. And Attorney General Sessions did mention this, but let me give you a little more detail. The FBI is investigating 300 people who were admitted into the United States as refugees as part of 1,000 counterterrorism investigations involving Islamic State or individuals inspired by that militant group. All right, so they're investigating just 300 of 1,000 who've been admitted into the United States as refugees. 300 is too many. And you can imagine there are going to be more than that. I just read a piece by a friend of mine who knows all about one of my tutors on Islam and what it really teaches. And she was just saying that, you know, one of the reasons that the left gave for not allowing the first executive order on immigration was that, listen, we can't stop them from coming in because most of them are radicalized after they come here. They don't come here radical. They're radicalized afterwards, which is some argument, really, honestly, for stopping this process and making sure we do what President Trump would call extreme vetting. So we shouldn't prevent them from coming in because, after all, they don't radicalize till they get here anyway. But my expert friend says to me, it's not that they're radicalized. There's no such thing. It's like if you grow up in church and your parents teach you scripture and songs and the Ten Commandments, and you suddenly, actually, your heart begins to beat faster as you get older because you're reading the Ten Commandments and scripture, and you actually let your faith take hold in your life, that isn't called radicalization. It's not radicalization. It is what Sharia teaches. The terrorism that we see is the natural result of Sharia law, which is Islamic law. And so it's not a radicalization, and so this is a problem, Houston. We have a problem. So the new executive order went out yesterday. Hans von Spakovsky has a good article on this, why Trump's revised executive order is constitutional, legal, and common sense. And, of course, the thing of it is Donald Trump had the right to issue the first order. There was nothing wrong with that first order. He has the right statutorily. In other words, there are laws in Congress that say the executive branch has all the authority over these issues and the Constitution itself. But because Donald Trump has such a weak Congress, could I say that again? Weak, weak, weak Congress. He has to do everything by himself. And because the courts are stacked with leftists, he's on his own, except for the half a dozen people around him in the White House who seem to actually be loyal to him. And so he has to do what he has to do. And this is the second order that removed some of the objections of the Ninth Circuit and should be able to withstand. You know it won't. You know that the left will not be stopped by law, by what's right and what's wrong, by statute, by constitution. They will do everything they can to stop it. And the resulting thing will be that we will be in more danger because they are insisting that our borders be porous and that nobody be vetted properly, that everybody has a right to come here. Every person who breathes in the entire planet has a right, yay, a duty, a constitutional right to be able to come to America and receive benefits and live with us. They don't have to become Americans because, after all, in the mind of the left, that's really bad to be an American, to love this country. That's just horrible. So we wouldn't want them to adapt our ways. No, instead, we want them to come and practice Sharia and kill us. That's really what it amounts to, and that's what the end game is. So that's what happened yesterday as well. Well, John went on with his report to talk about the update on wiretapping, which, of course, I want to talk about again, too. Let's listen.
The White House again today offered no evidence to back up President Trump's extraordinary assertion on Saturday that his predecessor had greenlighted wiretapping Trump Tower during the closing weeks of the election. But officials from the president on down called on Congress to investigate.
Let's investigate this and see where it leads. So let's have the House and Senate Intelligence Committees do their work and think about whether to include this, but the president has made clear that he would like there to be an investigation of any possible abuses.
Fox News has learned that the FBI leadership asked the Justice Department to send out a tweet refuting the president's claims, that Director James Comey believes the assertion to be false and must be corrected. But senior White House staff indicated the president's not buying what Comey is trying to sell.
Does President Trump accept the FBI director's denial? You know, I don't think he does, George.
Republican members of Congress walked a difficult line between backing the president and reporting what they knew to be true.
I've seen no evidence of the allegations we've seen in the media. That doesn't mean that none of these things happened. It simply means I haven't seen that yet.
Democrats rejected the idea that the president was being spied on, but said, either way, it looks bad.
If he falsely spread this kind of misinformation, that is so wrong. It's beneath the dignity of the presidency. If it's true, it's even worse for the president, because that means that a federal judge, independently elected, has found probable cause that the president or people on his staff have had probable cause to have broken the law or to have interacted with a foreign agent.
If the president was simply trying to change the subject away from the disastrous end of a week for him, mission accomplished. But in doing so, he has ignited a whole new line of questioning that could consume his staff for days to come.
Ridiculous, isn't it? I mean, you know, that the president of the United States would accuse Obama and his administration of doing surveillance, wiretapping Trump Tower. I mean, that's so outrageous, isn't it? I mean, I guess... Well, except maybe if you think that, well, wait a second. Did they not tap the phone of Lieutenant General Flynn in Trump Tower? Isn't that the reason that we know that he had conversations with the Russian ambassador, with the Russian foreign minister? Because they wiretapped his phone out of Trump Tower. I mean, but still, isn't it silly that the president of the United States would say that the Obama administration ordered that? Except they did. And so two things I want to say. First of all, leadership in Congress, weak, weak, weak Congress. If they truly stopped to think about this, they'd have to do something. So easier to say, I don't know anything about that. Oh, no, I know. Easier to laugh, easier to distance than to really come to grips with what this might mean. And so I think there is no question about it. The reason that the left has gotten away with so much of what they've gotten away with, I think back to Bill Clinton. He did so many horrible things, and Mrs. Clinton as well, that there was an incredulity. No, that can't be true. Oh, no, that can't be true. There are things about Barack Obama, many, many things. Oh, that can't be true. Let's just laugh about it. It can't be true. Let's call it conspiracy theories because, you know, it can't be true. Except let me just share a few things with you. This is from the Washington Post editorial board, and this is the title. Now, this contradicts their editorial pages, okay? So just let me tell you. But this is their editorial board. Why Trump might suspect Obama bugged Trump Tower. President Trump's claim that his predecessor bugged Trump Tower during the election has sent the media into fits, wondering where on earth he could have gotten such an idea. But it's all too obvious why Trump would be suspicious. From the day Trump won election, his foes have waged a by any means necessary campaign to overturn the results. Officials, likely Obama-era holdovers, have broken the law and leaked what they hoped would be damaging information. Groups tied to Obama have stirred up angry protests against Trump and other Republicans. The New York Times reported Obama's staff purposely spread information throughout the administration that could hurt Trump, though they said the goal was to make sure the info wasn't buried. Critics say Trump's wiretap claim is baseless. But what is truly lacking in solid evidence is the claim that there was some sort of collusion between Trump or his aides and Russian officials to hijack the election. Yet that's all Trump foes and much of the press want to talk about. And you know what? Let's just stop for a second. Jeff, grab a clip 11, please. Let's just drop that in. This is Chuck Todd with James Clapper, the former director of National Intelligence. I just want you to hear this again.
Does intelligence exist that can definitively answer the following question, whether there were improper contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials?
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
I understand that, but does it exist?
Not to my knowledge.
And do you remember that the assistant FBI director approached Reince Priebus at the White House, telling him they had found nothing, no link to the Trump campaign and the Russians? There is nothing here. There is nothing here. And so many of us believe this is just a witch hunt. It was an excuse to get into the inside of the Trump campaign. And certainly they did that, whether they surveilled Donald Trump's personal phone, his personal computer, I don't know. But why wouldn't they? They were surveilling Michael Flynn. They were surveilling Paul Manafort and a couple of other people whose names I can't recall. But we know those things for sure. But we don't exactly know what. We know there were three FISA requests. I mean, federal, it's a surveillance request. That's what it is. You go into this secret courtroom, the FBI brings the request, and it's a request to surveil, which means whatever it means, including whether it requires wiretapping, getting into a computer, whatever. It's surveillance. And they were granted surveillance in October. And now, isn't it interesting that the FBI director has been silent after that alleged leak to the New York Times Monday that the FBI director, or maybe it was Sunday, that the FBI director, you know, wants the FBI to, or the Justice Department to make a statement that there was no wiretapping of the Trump Tower. But he hasn't said anything, has he? Why hasn't he? Why hasn't the FBI director come out and said something? Why would there just be a leak in the New York Times? I'm just thinking, maybe there is something to hide here. And I think there certainly is. In fact, the Gateway Pundit had a list this morning of more than a dozen entities or people who were wiretapped by the Obama administration. Remember Ban Ki-moon, the UN Secretary General, talking with German Chancellor Angela Merkel? Remember how Mrs. Merkel was so upset that her phone had been tapped? There are lots here, but I'll just say Obama stole sensitive Italian diplomatic cables between Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, imploring Italy's Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi to help patch his relationship with the U.S. They targeted the phones of Italy's ambassador to NATO and other top Italian officials. They intercepted details of a critical private meeting between the French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, Merkel, and Berlusconi. Individuals were tapped in the U.S. media, including James Rosen and his family. The Associated Press, The New Yorker, reporter Cheryl Atkinson said her personal computer and CBS laptop were hacked. So there are a few examples of the Obama administration hacking, surveilling private citizens, journalists, foreign leaders. So why would it be so shocking? In fact, you just heard the Washington Post editorial page refuting their own pages, saying, well, maybe this is why President Trump would suspect that, because it actually has happened. So then there's this article here. This is out of Breitbart. Here it is. The New York Times has inadvertently attacked the credibility of its own reporting on the Obama administration's investigation of Russia and now President Donald Trump. On Sunday, this is from Breitbart. This is an article. The Times reporter Michael Schmidt and Michael Shear write that Trump believes the deep state intelligence community, staffed with holdovers from the Obama administration, wiretapped several of his campaign associates because of a spurious article from Breitbart News. So this is what Schmidt and Scheer write. On Sunday, the president demanded a congressional inquiry into whether Mr. Obama had abused the power of federal law enforcement agencies before the 2016 presidential election. In a statement from his spokesman, Mr. Trump called reports about wiretapping very troubling and said that Congress should examine them as part of their investigation into Russia's meddling. Mr. Trump's demand for a congressional investigation appears to be based at least in part on unproved claims by Breitbart News and conservative talk radio hosts that secret warrants were issued authorizing the tapping of phones. But the problem is they didn't link to the article, meaning Schmidt and Scheer, the Times reporters, because in the article, the Breitbart cites a New York Times article of January 19th titled Intercepted Russian Communications, Part of Inquiry into Trump Associates. And there's more to say about it, and we'll do that. Mark Levin has written a letter to the head of NBC, and it's really a barn burner. We'll listen to that read that in just a second. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Music. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. Don't let the name fool you. Disney is no friend of the family. And with their latest effort to push the LGBT agenda upon children, that's been proven once again. Disney has now introduced gay and lesbian kissing in one of its most popular cartoons, Star vs. the Forces of Evil, on the Disney XD channel. The scene featured several gay and lesbian couples kissing and also featured transgender characters in this children's cartoon. But Disney isn't stopping there. The new Disney film, Beauty and the Beast, which hits theaters later this month, will feature a gay character and what the film's director describes as a, quote, a nice exclusively gay moment in a Disney movie, unquote. Will we allow Disney to teach our children that homosexuality is natural? Who will mold your children and grandchildren, Disney or the Word of God? This is a Decency Minute. Find us at AmericanDecency.org. I'm Bill Johnson.
The financial world certainly can be intimidating, and our livelihood, of course, depends upon it, but God is in control of all things. Hi, this is Dan Celia from Financial Issues. I take your calls every day and give you answers from a biblical perspective and break down the day's financial numbers to help keep you informed. Financial Issues every weekday morning at 8 o'clock Central Time and Saturday mornings, 10 o'clock Central Time on American Family Radio.
American Family Association, a ministry with a mission to inform, equip, and activate people like you to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture and to give aid to the church here and abroad in her task of fulfilling the Great Commission. We couldn't do it without your day-to-day support. Together, we are making a difference. American Family Association. Find us online at afa.net.
Steve Tiber of 8 Days of Hope.
Our great country continues to get slammed by natural disasters, hurricanes and tornadoes, flooding. I mean, it's everywhere from Texas, South Carolina, to Georgia, Mississippi, all throughout the country. Our country has suffered. Here's where you and I get a chance to be a glimpse of Jesus. It is so cool to meet a homeowner who has gone to no fault of their own. Their world has been turned upside down, and you get a chance to bless them. You know, we tarp roofs and do chainsaw work, and we gut homes that flooded right after disaster with our rapid response team. And then we also look to rebuild homes with 8 Days of Hope, like we've done 12 different areas of the country. 1,800 homes, $25 million of damage. People all the time say, man, you're good. Well, we're not that good, but he is great. Be a part of something unique. 8 Days of Hope.
Learn more at 8daysofhope.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, Donald Trump reasserted his constitutional and statutorily conferred authority to bar entry to this country to certain individuals. In the process of executing a new executive order for this purpose, he rescinded a previous much criticized and legally challenged one. But Mr. Trump has reaffirmed the basic principle that he can and must act to prevent more actual or potential terrorists from coming here. Still think that's unnecessary? The FBI revealed yesterday that it is investigating 300 refugees suspected of ties to terrorism. Now, those suspicions may not be verified, but are there more with such ties among the many thousands of others who have come here from nations that are hotbeds of jihadism, including some that are wholly insecure, failed states? President Trump deserves our thanks for trying to protect us against such clear and probably present dangers. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Does intelligence exist that can definitively answer the following question, whether there were improper contacts between the Trump campaign and Russian officials?
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
I understand that, but does it exist?
Not to my knowledge.
I played that again because I just want you to hear that. And that is generally the consensus everywhere. except by, you know, Chuck Schumer, the collusion with the Russians and Nancy Pelosi. I mean, Jeff Sessions needs to recuse himself because of his collusion with, you know, I'll tell you who's colluding with the Russians. I'll just give you one example. It came out, I think this is from the Daily Caller. Yes, it is. Does the name Podesta mean anything to you? Remember John Podesta? John Podesta is the national campaign chairman for former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. He's been involved with the Clintons for years. He runs the Center for American Progress. His brother, Tony, who's right in D.C., also, this is the story. Tony Podesta was paid $170,000 over a six-month period last year to represent SureBank, Russia's largest bank, seeking to end one of the Obama administration's economic sanctions against that country. Hang on, just stop and let that soak in. Sanctions against Russia? So Tony Podesta, the brother, close brother to John Podesta, you can read in the papers, they're very close, is being paid by SureBank $170,000 to end the sanctions. End the sanctions. Okay, so Podesta, meaning Tony, founder and chairman of the Podesta Group, is listed as a key lobbyist on behalf of Spurbank, according to Senate lobbying disclosure forms. His firm received more than $24 million in fees in 2016, much of it coming from foreign governments. Podesta's the brother John, and on it goes. Okay, so I know that doesn't mean anything, right? That means nothing. By the way, of course it means something. The Daily Caller says the discovery of high-profile Democrats like Podesta being paid lucrative fees for lobbying to lift U.S. sanctions on Russia contrasts with charges from Democrats that President Donald Trump and his key aides are soft on Russia, while the Obama administration was tough on Moscow. Tough on them. They actually gave them that cheap, silly reset button. They actually sold all of the United States uranium, most of them, uranium resources, so that Russia could access them. And uranium, of course, is used in building nuclear weapons. We could go on and on. The connections between the Democrats and the Russians are legendary. I could go on and on about Barack Obama's connection. His parents met in Russian class. His dad was a Marxist. His father, his grandfather was a leftist. Frank Marshall Davis was a communist. And Russia was a romanced place in the lives of red diaper babies. Mother Russia was just this. You have only to listen. I realize some of you are so young you can't possibly comprehend. Russia was the military state, the hammer and sickle, the military music, the marching in lockstep, the grand speeches, the big pictures. This was a romantic thing for some. Never mind that they murdered their own people, millions of them. That's what totalitarian states do. But Russia was romanticized by the left and still is, and I would say more than romanticized, colluded with. Ted Kennedy, of course, colluded openly with the Russians. We have a letter that was made public in the early 2000s because of the releasing of inside information, public information acts. Personally writing a letter to the Kremlin asking for their help to beat Ronald Reagan here at home, to do what they could to subvert him, because Ted Kennedy would be much more friendly with the Russians. It was a communist country then. They were our enemies. Not like now. I mean, I'm saying, you know, many people believe they're our enemies now, but during that time, the Cold War was still raging, and Russia was our big enemy with a capital E. And Ted Kennedy's writing them saying, help me beat Ronald Reagan here at home, because I'll be much nicer to you if I get elected president. You tell me who's colluding with the Russians. Okay, so the Breitbart article I mentioned a few minutes ago talked about these New York Times reporters who were ridiculing Trump for thinking he's being wiretapped, and this report that the deep state intelligence community is trying to undermine and destroy his presidency. And so they write this hit piece, and they you know, skewer Breitbart, but what they fail to do is cite the piece that Breitbart cited writing their article, which was a Times piece written on January the 19th. And I read it before the break. I'll read it again. Intercepted Russian communications, part of inquiry into Trump associates. And the other editorial was headlined in the New York Times, "Wiretapped Data Used in Inquiry of Trump Aides." And then the New York Times, that article quotes an anonymous source who says the wiretap communications had been provided to the White House as part of an investigation into the, quote, business dealings that some of the president-elect's past and president advisors had had with Russia. So you tell me who's making up something here. You tell me where the liars reside in this situation. I have so much to tell you. Well, I want to read. Mark Levin actually has been, he went back through the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and other mainstream publications, what they actually have said themselves about this wiretapping and surveillance. And he makes a very powerful case, which I believe we put on our Facebook, and if we didn't, we will. He makes the case for why this is true and why Trump is upset and why he should be. And this is what he says to Brian Stelter, who is the head of, you know what, I don't know if Stelter is the CEO of CNN or not. I'm not sure. I have to check on that. I think he is. Here he goes. This is the letter from Mark Levin. Did you listen to my show on Thursday before President Trump tweeted? Did you watch my appearance on Fox and Friends Sunday morning? I know you're ticked I did not appear on your show, despite your numerous requests. Your ad hominem attacks about right-wing radio hosts and conspiracy theory stuff, incredible. I simply put together the stories that your profession reported on the public record. Did you deny that there were two FISA applications? Do you deny the first was turned down? Do you deny the second was approved? It's called the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. It's about surveillance. The fact that we cannot discern all the details because of the secrecy except for what the media has revealed and selective leaks by the government should cause you to want to know more, not to trash those who point it out. And yes, we can make several logical implications based on events and experience. A FISA application is a big deal. One or two in this case that involve campaign surrogates or a server or computer related to a candidate or campaign is a big deal. President Obama's statement is not a definite statement of anything other than he personally did not order a wiretap, which I never claimed. But that does not mean he was unaware of surveillance activity by several of his departments, even through routine reports to the president, such as the daily intel briefing or information conveyed to him on his staff or his staff via the Justice Department regarding the FBI counterintelligence activities. As for Clapper, despite his past dissembling before Congress, he may not have been aware of what was taking place since the FBI counter-intel operation reportedly sought the warrant. The daily intel briefing might provide useful information in that regard as well. Of course, the release of the FISA applications would also shed a lot of light on events, assuming you believe reports that they were filed. Furthermore, Clapper has said, as recently as yesterday, that no connections between the Russians and the Trump campaign have been found. I'm extremely, meaning Mark, critical of Russia, Putin, and the efforts to influence our election, although I do not believe they succeeded. That said, how would Clapper know of no connection if he, as former director of national intelligence, didn't look? On what is that based? Your lack of curiosity and dishonesty about such matters in dealing with me demean you and your profession. You are free to circulate this communication to whomever you wish. I am making it public. So that was Mark Levin to CNN, and it must be Brian Stelter. He must be the CEO. All right, the Washington Post. No, I'll choose this one. There were two articles that I singled out this morning that I read. This is unbelievable. This is a news story about this thing, and this is the headline: Inside Trump's Fury. The president rages as leaks, setbacks, and accusations. President Trump spent the weekend at the Winter House, Mar-a-Lago, the secluded Florida castle where he is king. The sun sparkles off the glistening lawn and warms the russet clay Spanish tiles, and the steaks are cooked just how he likes them. Well done. His daughter Ivanka and his son-in-law Jared Kushner celebrated as calming influences on the tempestuous president. But they were helpless to contain his fury. Trump was mad, steaming, raging mad. This is a news article. Oh, in case some of you didn't know, news is supposed to be unbiased, I'm a commentator. I'm not supposed to be unbiased. But news reports in a newspaper are supposed to report the news, not commentate on someone feeling like king in his Florida castle. That's editorial completely and totally. And then you go down in this article, talks about Christopher Ruddy, who runs Newsmax. They ran into each other on the golf course, and Trump vented to his friend, meaning Christopher Ruddy, "This will be investigated," Ruddy recalled Trump telling him. "It will all come out. I will be proven right." He was blanked, the Ruddy chief executive Newsmax said. "I haven't seen him this angry." Could I just ask what Christopher Ruddy is doing running to the Washington Post and telling them about a private conversation he had with his friend Donald Trump on the golf course? Mark that one. Never talk to Christopher Ruddy again. Then it goes on to say, this account of the administration's tumultuous recent days is based on interviews with, ready? 17 top White House officials, members of Congress, and friends of the president, many of whom requested anonymity to speak candidly. And then it goes on and on to wax eloquent about things it claims it knows from these unnamed sources and 17 people working in the White House. The Daily Mail ups them one. This was amazing. These are the headlines on the Daily Mail. Donald's eruption in the Oval Office. Video emerges of Trump's furious argument with top advisor Steve Bannon as Ivanka and Jared look on hours before president made phone tapping claims. Donald Trump gave verbal lashings to his senior staff members on Friday. Video has since emerged of Bannon in an animated discussion in the Oval Office. Bannon and Priebus were told they weren't flying with Trump to Mar-a-Lago. And then it goes, so here's the deal when you get into the text. CNN, actually, that's something we didn't have this morning, was a report from CNN where they salivate over these pictures they have of the window into the Oval Office. You can see Steve Bannon. You can make him out. Then you see the backs of a couple of other people passing by the window. And CNN is, first of all, what? CNN is taking shots of the inside of the Oval Office? If they can get that, then who else could do that? To do what? Okay, but I digress. But here's the text. While it's not clear what the discussion was about, Bannon was filmed in an animated conversation and at one point was spotted waving his arms around. Trump had accused his staff of fumbling the situation with Sessions after the attorney general recused himself. Okay, so that goes on and makes this case. They call it a furious row between Bannon and the president and Reince Priebus. And then it claims that Trump ordered them. Okay, here's another. Here's a picture. Bannon was pictured boarding Air Force One at a separate entrance to Trump on Sunday, just days after the president told him he wasn't allowed to fly with him to Florida after the fight. Okay, so then you keep reading the article, and you see, in the wake of Trump's fury, Bannon and Priebus were no longer riding in the aircraft to travel to Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. But here's the next part. A source told ABC News that both men volunteered not to make the trip to Florida and instead stayed in Washington, and Trump agreed that they should. And then it says Bannon later flew out to Florida on Saturday, but it was not clear if that was his intended travel plans. It is absolute garbage. No one ever goes up those main steps to enter Air Force One. They enter by a lower gate. There's nothing there. And when you see the video that CNN is salivating over, you see Bannon just sticking up his arm, but they claim it's this terrible fight. It's just, do you see what's happening? Fake news. Unbelievable. Fake story of some connection. And it's upon this that they would like to destroy this president. Meanwhile, he's telling Planned Parenthood that he'll fund them if they'll stop providing abortions. I think it's great. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.